Crime and Crime Again is a true crime podcast containing subject matter that may be graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Born on January 3, 1974, Susan Marie Casey, known as Susie to family and friends, grew up in Circle, Montana with her five siblings. In high school, Susie was well-rounded, having played basketball for 2 years, played in her high school band for all 4 years, and participated in 4-H. But her greatest love in life was horses. She loved competing in rodeos and spending her days in the saddle. And according to her family, her favorite horse was named Mark. Susie graduated from Circle High School in 1992 and went on to attend Billings Business College, about 4 hours away from her hometown. She graduated from college in 1993 and moved back to her hometown of Circle, where she got a job working at a nursing home. While she was in college, Susie met a man named Marty Larson, and their relationship progressed more quickly than Susie's family would have liked. Her family never really liked Marty, but they wanted to support Susie and see her happy. So when Susie got pregnant and started planning a small church wedding, her family was apprehensive, but they were there. Susie gave birth to her first daughter, Mariah, in 1993. And 2 years later, in 1995, Susie and Marty welcomed their first son, Shay. Susie lived with Marty, raising their two children together until 1998, when they got divorced after 5 years of marriage. Soon after their divorce, Susie actually ended up filing a restraining order against Marty, and he was not involved in his children's lives after he and Susie parted ways. Not long after her divorce from Marty, Susie moved to Glendive, Montana, where she got a job as a medical transcriptionist at the Glendive Medical Center. After moving to Glendive, Susie met a man named Ted Casey, who was 14 years older than her and held the key to Susie's heart. Ted was a rancher who owned horses. For Susie, it felt like a match made in heaven. Susie married Ted in 1998. At the time, Mariah was 5 and Shay was 3. Because they were so young and their biological father was no longer in their life, they grew up knowing Ted as their dad. By 2002, Susie and Ted had 2 daughters together, Kiana and Charlie. By most accounts, Susie and Ted had a relatively good marriage. But in 2007, after almost 10 years together, Susie was confiding in her family and friends that the marriage was coming undone. The thing about Susie was that she was charismatic, a social butterfly who cherished her freedom. And after nearly 10 years of marriage with Ted Casey, Susie was feeling smothered, and the couple was having disagreements about Susie's nights out. In October 2007, while enjoying a night out at a bar, Susie and Ted got into an argument that ended with Ted pouring a beer over Susie's head before slapping her. This landed Ted in jail for the night, and he pleaded guilty to misdemeanor domestic assault. For Susie, that was the end of it. Susie soon moved into the Ponderosa Apartments in Glendive, leaving behind the ranch and the life she dreamed of. All 4 of her children moved in with her, but they did split their time between their mother and father's houses. By April 2008, Susie seemed to be thriving, and she was dating someone new. She had recently run into a man named Brad Holzer, who she had dated in high school almost 20 years earlier, when she was 16 and he was 19. They hadn't spoken in 2 decades, but they clicked immediately, and they found that that old spark had never been fully extinguished. At the time, Brad was also in the process of divorcing his wife, with whom he had 3 children. On the night of April 11, 2008, Susie dropped off her younger daughters, Kiana and Charlie, to her soon-to-be ex-husband, Ted's house, around 7 p.m. The older 2 children, Mariah and Shay, stayed home in the apartment by themselves for the night. After dropping off her youngest daughters, Susie went to her friend's house and chatted over drinks for a while, until she got a call from Brad around 9:30 p.m. Brad picked her up around 11 p.m. and they went out for the night. The next morning, 14-year-old Mariah and 12-year-old Shay woke up to find that their mother still wasn't home. This was not like her. Susie enjoyed having fun and was relishing in her newfound freedom after a crumbled marriage, but she always showed up for her children. She was there when they woke up every morning. But on the morning of April 12, 2008, Susie's bed was empty, and her children were alone. Mariah and Shay immediately started calling Susie, but all they heard on the other end was her voicemail greeting. Mariah left her a few messages, but after a while, when she still hadn't received a call back, she started calling other family members. One of her first phone calls was to her grandparents, Susie's mother and father, telling them that she hadn't come home and asking if they'd heard from her. It wasn't long before Susie's brother, Rusty, and his wife, Val, learned that Susie was nowhere to be found and wasn't answering her children's calls. Val had actually left Susie a voicemail that morning before she even knew that she was missing. In the message, Val asked Susie if she wanted to attend a craft fair with her that day, but she never got a call back. Val was actually at that craft fair when she got the call that her sister-in-law was missing. No one had seen or heard from Susie since the day before. Val immediately jumped into action, making a few phone calls to figure out where Susie had gone the night before. The first stop that she made was to Ted's house, hoping he would have information about where Susie was, or hoping that Susie would be there picking up her two youngest daughters. But when she arrived at Ted's house, there were no cars in the driveway and the house seemed to be empty. Feeling inexplicably unsettled, Val decided to pick up her husband Rusty to help her continue her search. When Val learned that Susie had spent the night out with her new boyfriend Brad, she and Rusty went to his house to talk to him. As it turned out, Brad only lived about 5 minutes down the street from Susie's apartment. Brad was concerned when he learned that Susie hadn't returned home the night before. He told Val and Rusty that he dropped Susie off right outside of her apartment around 5 a.m. and watched as she walked toward her front door, wearing his sweatshirt. At that point, Val and Rusty called the Glendive police to report Susie missing. Captain Ty Ulrich with the Glendive police sat down with Val and Rusty and tried calling Susie's phone himself. When he got her voicemail twice, he knew how deeply troubling the situation was. For a mother of four to not answer when her children called was cause for alarm. Investigators began processing the scene outside of Susie's apartment where she was last seen. Next to Susie's apartment were a few storefronts, and in an alcove in front of one of those stores, investigators found multiple identical footprints in the dirt, creating a pattern that looked as though whoever was standing there was pacing back and forth. And in the alley next to Susie's front door, investigators found what appeared to be drag marks from someone's feet in the dirt next to some trash cans. There was no indication that any struggle had taken place inside Susie's apartment, and her car, which was still parked outside, bore no evidence that anything nefarious had happened inside of it either. Two doors down from Susie's apartment was a branch of U.S. Bank, and on their ATM machine was a camera that faced toward the Ponderosa Apartments. The quality of the footage was extremely grainy, making it difficult to discern certain details. But at 4:27 a.m., the ATM camera captured what appeared to be a figure in dark clothing walking toward Susie's apartment. At 4:52 a.m., the camera captured what looked to be a truck pulling in and parking across the street from the Ponderosa building. 27 minutes later, at 5:19 a.m., the dome light in the truck came on, which investigators believed was Susie getting out of the truck. The vehicle then backed out and left. At 5:38 a.m., the ATM camera captured the same figure clad in black clothing walking away from Susie's apartment, more than an hour after that same figure was first seen walking toward the building. And at 5:45 a.m., a silver vehicle was seen driving past the Ponderosa Apartments and leaving the area. The Stockman Bank, just a few doors down from Susie's apartment, had surveillance cameras on their building, And sure enough, their camera captured a silver minivan driving past and leaving the area at 5:45 a.m. At 5:52 a.m., another truck was seen on the U.S. Bank ATM camera passing by the building. Captain Ulrich and his colleagues quickly started gathering persons of interest to come to the station for interviews about Susie's odd disappearance. Brad willingly sat down with police and told them that on the night of April 11th, he picked Susie up around 11 p.m., and they drove out to a remote area on the bank of the Yellowstone River, where they talked and drank and enjoyed themselves, as couples do. He stated that he parked across the street from Susie's apartment around 5 a.m., and they stayed in the truck for about 20 minutes before she got out and walked toward her apartment, wearing his sweatshirt and carrying her leather jacket. Brad did not see her actually go inside of her apartment building. This all aligned with the footage from the ATM surveillance footage police had collected. They believed that the truck seen arriving at 4:52 a.m. and leaving at 5:19 a.m. was indeed Brad's truck. Brad claimed that he was home and asleep by 5:30 a.m. and that he hadn't spoken to Susie since dropping her off at home. But Brad also had a bizarre piece of information to offer the police. He told them that on the morning of April 11th, hours before he and Susie went out for the night, he received an email from someone named Denise Johnson. The email read, quote, "How's your girlfriend? How does your wife feel about it?" End quote. Brad's soon-to-be ex-wife also sat down with police, and she corroborated Brad's story. As it turned out, she was also dating someone else and was out with her date on the night of April 11th. When she returned home the next morning around 6 a.m., she found that Brad was asleep in bed. But she also had a strange story for police. The week before Susie disappeared, Brad's wife received a phone call from someone asking for Brad. When she told the caller that he wasn't available, they asked her to deliver a message to him. Quote, "Stop messing around with married women," end quote. She noted that the caller sounded like a woman. Ted Casey, Susie's soon-to-be ex-husband, was also brought to speak with police. Ted told investigators that he last saw Susie on the evening of April 11th, around 7 p.m. when she dropped off Kiana and Charlie. But that wasn't the last time he had spoken to Susie. A couple hours after Susie dropped off the girls, Ted received a phone call from a man who said, quote, "Brad Holzer has been screwing your wife," end quote, before abruptly hanging up. Infuriated, Ted immediately called Susie, demanding to know what that anonymous phone call was about and if she really was seeing another man. This, in turn, angered Susie. She was divorcing Ted and no longer even lived with him. As far as she was concerned, he had no right to know if she was seeing anyone at all. After a brief argument, they hung up before Susie called back, only to say that she did know Brad. She ended the conversation there and did not answer any more of Ted's calls or texts that night. Ted told investigators that he went to bed not long after his phone argument with Susie, and that he got up the next morning around 5 a.m. to take Kiana and Charlie to his brother's house. He then drove to City Hall in Glendive, where he would be working that morning waxing the floors in the building. Interestingly, Ted admitted that he drove right past Susie's apartment on his way to City Hall. This would have placed him driving by her apartment just before 6 a.m. Investigators believed that the truck captured on the ATM surveillance footage driving past Susie's apartment at 5:52 a.m. was in fact Ted Casey's truck. Ted also told police that around 9 a.m., as he was leaving City Hall, he received a call telling him that Susie had not returned home the night before. So he tried calling Susie and left her a message saying, quote, "Well, Susie, I just called Mariah and seems like you didn't make it home last night. So maybe what somebody called me and said maybe is true, or you're doing somebody else," end quote. Police started investigating Susie's phone records, and they were able to corroborate the phone calls that Ted had made to Susie's phone. They matched up perfectly with the times that Ted gave them. But what they were not expecting to find in Susie's phone records were nearly 30 phone calls from the same number on the night of April 11th, just hours before she disappeared. The phone calls began around 12:30 a.m. At that time, Susie would have been on her date with Brad. Mariah was able to provide police with the password to Susie's voicemail, allowing them to listen to any voicemail messages left on her phone. They discovered that the same phone number that had appeared repeatedly in Susie's phone records had also left her 22 voicemail messages. The voicemails started out innocuous enough, a man checking on Susie and asking if she could give him a call back. But over the course of 3 hours, the messages gradually became more desperate, pleading, obsessive.
If you don't call me back by 1 o'clock, I would love to hear from you and make sure everything is okay with you. I don't know what to do. You won't answer me. Please let me know that you're okay.
Police were surprised to learn that the phone number belonged to Marty Larson, Susie's first husband and the father of her oldest two children. Marty lived 3 hours away from Glendive in Billings, Montana. As far as Susie's family and friends knew, she had not seen or even spoken with Marty in 10 years. After their divorce, Marty completely fell out of the picture. He didn't pay child support, and he didn't see or speak with Mariah or Shay in all those years. But when police spoke with Mariah, they learned that back in 2007, she had reached out to her biological father of her own volition, hoping to reconnect. And this brought Susie and Marty back into each other's lives. They were communicating again, if for no other reason than their children. Mariah and Shay even visited with Marty on a few occasions. When Mariah heard some of the voicemails left for her mother on the night she went missing, she instantly recognized the voice as Marty's. Police quickly moved to speak to Marty Larson and find out why he called Susie almost 30 times on the night she disappeared, and, more importantly, if he knew anything about her disappearance. Glendive police contacted Billings police, asking them to go to Marty's apartment and bring him in for questioning. Marty willingly allowed police into his apartment to perform a cursory search. In Marty's trash can, police found a crumpled list of seemingly random expenses. But when they looked more closely, they found that the list consisted of hotel expenses, how much it would cost to hire a minister, and other expenses one might need to consider for a trip to Las Vegas. It seemed that Marty was planning a shotgun wedding in Sin City. Police also found an empty bottle of toilet bowl cleaner in Marty's trash can. This wouldn't have piqued their interest if the toilets in Marty's apartment were actually clean. They had to wonder what other purpose Marty may have had for using an entire bottle of toilet bowl cleaner. And they believed they found the answer to that question when they searched Marty's minivan. The van was freshly washed and shining. The interior of the vehicle had also been deep cleaned, the carpet in the trunk appearing to have been scrubbed with a strong-scented chemical cleaner. But the minivan wasn't spotless. In the back of the van, behind the rear seats, investigators found one singular hair, blonde and about 8 inches long. It was collected and sent off for testing, and that hair later came back as a mitochondrial DNA match to Susie Casey. Marty also submitted to having several photographs taken of him. Police photographed his arms and hands before asking Marty to remove his shirt so they could photograph his back. And on Marty's back, all the way up to his neck, were what appeared to be fresh, angry scratches. But all of that on its own was not enough to make an arrest. Police wanted to hear what Marty had to say. In the interrogation room, Marty told police about how he'd recently reconnected with Mariah and Shay, and in turn, Susie. He claimed that this rekindling with Susie had moved beyond the sake of their children. It was Marty's belief that he and Susie were falling in love again. He told police that they were making plans to get remarried. Hence the discarded list of Vegas wedding expenses found in his apartment. What came as a surprise to detectives was that Marty freely admitted to making those numerous phone calls to Susie on the night that she disappeared. He claimed that around 12:30 a.m., after he hadn't heard from Susie in a few hours, he tried calling her to make sure that she was okay. He knew that she was out drinking and he was concerned for her. But after an hour passed and Susie still had not called him back, he was so troubled that he called Susie's parents, waking them up in the wee hours of the morning, asking if they had heard from her. What really sent detectives' heads spinning was Marty's admission that he had made those 30 phone calls while he was making the three-hour drive from Billings to Glendive, planning to go to Susie's apartment to check on her. Marty told police that he left Billings around 1:30 a.m. And sure enough, surveillance footage from the Blue Basket gas station in Billings captured Marty getting gas at 1:39 a.m. Marty claimed that he arrived at Susie's apartment around 4:30 a.m. Records from cell towers showed that Marty's phone did indeed ping off of a tower in Glendive just before 4:30. This led detectives to believe that the darkly clad figure seen on the ATM footage at 4:27 a.m. walking towards Susie's apartment was indeed Marty Larson. He claimed that despite having arrived 25 minutes before Brad and Susie pulled up in the truck, he didn't see them when they arrived, and he had no idea that Susie was with Brad all night that night. According to Marty, when he arrived at the apartment, he went into the building and knocked softly on her door. But when he got no response, he went back outside and tried calling her a few more times. When he still didn't get a response, he got back in his van and made the three-hour drive back to Billings. Detectives concluded that the figure seen walking away from Susie's apartment at 5:38 a.m. was Marty walking back to his minivan to leave. He claimed that he didn't see or speak with Susie at all while he was outside of her apartment. But this revelation only created more questions. If Marty arrived and was waiting outside of Susie's apartment 25 minutes before she arrived in Brad's truck, how did Marty not see the truck? And if Susie got out of the truck to go into her apartment at 5:19 a.m., and Marty did not walk back toward his minivan until 5:38, how is it that he didn't see or interact with Susie in that time? If he was waiting outside of her apartment, he certainly would have had to be standing right there as she went inside. Marty told detectives that on the night he drove to Susie's apartment, he was wearing a t-shirt and white New Balance tennis shoes. But when police discovered surveillance footage from a gas station 78 miles away from Glendive, they found a blip in Marty's story. The footage showed Marty at 8:15 a.m. on the morning of April 12th, getting gas on his way back to Billings. In the footage, Marty is seen wearing a white t-shirt, but on his feet are shoes that are very clearly black, not white. Investigators never found the shoes that Marty was wearing in this footage. Not only that, but if Marty's minivan was captured leaving Susie's apartment at 5:38 a.m., presumably to drive back to Billings, why was he still so far away from Billings nearly 3 hours after leaving Glendive? The trip from Glendive to Billings is just over 3 hours long. The gas station footage at 8:15 a.m. puts Marty only 78 miles away from Glendive and still 2 hours away from Billings, even though by that point, Marty should have been less than 20 minutes away from home. Why was there such a bizarre discrepancy in his travel time? Perhaps one of the more unsettling moments of Marty's interrogation came after detectives left the room, leaving Marty alone.
Oh, Susie, where are you? Where are you? Those kids need you. I need you. I love you, Susie. Just wish I knew where you were.
During the search of Marty's apartment, investigators seized his computer and discovered that Marty had created the fake email account by the name of Denise Johnson and had sent those bizarre emails to Brad Holzer the morning before Susie disappeared. Detectives also learned that at 9:51 p.m. on April 11th, just hours before Susie went missing, she called Marty, accusing him of making that bizarre phone call to Ted, telling him that Brad Holzer was quote-unquote screwing his wife. During that phone call, Marty admitted to Susie that he did make that call to Ted, and Susie was infuriated about it. This led to a brief argument over the phone before Susie hung up, and she refused to answer any more of Marty's calls that night. This led detectives to believe that Marty was the one who had made the bizarre phone call not only to Ted, but to Brad and his wife as well. When detectives looked further into Susie and Marty's history with one another, they discovered the restraining order Susie filed against Marty back in 1998 after their divorce. Further, they discovered the reason that Susie had filed the restraining order. Not long after Susie married Ted, Marty drove 3 hours from Billings to Glendive and showed up at Susie and Ted's house demanding to speak with her. After a while, the situation was resolved and Marty left. But soon after, Marty returned to Susie and Ted's house, this time with a loaded shotgun in his car. At that point, police were called and Susie filed the restraining order. Marty was charged with and convicted of criminal trespass. Despite the fact that Susie and Marty seemed to have reconnected for the sake of their children in the months before her disappearance, detectives felt that Marty's nearly 30 phone calls to Susie on the night she disappeared were sufficient grounds to arrest him for violating that 10-year-old restraining order. He was arrested on April 14, 2008, but a judge soon dismissed the charges because Marty had never been formally notified of the restraining order. While detectives were questioning their three primary persons of interest, Susie remained missing. The searches for Susie were extensive, covering around 11,000 acres with law enforcement, Susie's family and friends, and volunteers on horseback and ATVs. But nothing was found, and Susie's loved ones were left in limbo. That was until May 6, 2008, nearly a month after Susie disappeared, when an employee for Montana Fish and Wildlife was working near the bank of the Yellowstone River in Fallon, Montana. The employee noticed something floating near the shore, and when he realized that it was a body, he called 911. The body was quickly identified as 34-year-old Susan Casey. Susie's autopsy revealed that she was already deceased when she was put into the water, and her hyoid bone had been broken, indicating that her cause of death was likely manual strangulation. But unfortunately, due to the fact that Susie had been left in the water, no other forensic evidence could be gleaned from her body. Despite Susie last being seen walking toward her apartment building, her body was found 28 miles away. And interestingly, Fallon, Montana was along the direct route that Marty would have taken to get back home to Billings on the morning that Susie disappeared. Her heartbroken family and friends couldn't make sense of how she ended up there, and their suspicions were mounting against all three of the men that detectives were investigating. Susie's new boyfriend, Brad, was parked across the street from her apartment at 4:52 a.m. Susie got out of his truck and walked toward her front door at 5:19 a.m. Susie's ex-husband, Marty, by his own admission, arrived outside of Susie's apartment at 4:27 a.m. 25 minutes before Susie herself even arrived. Marty left the area at 5:38 a.m. And at 5:52 a.m., Susie's soon-to-be ex-husband, Ted, was seen driving through the area, right past the Ponderosa Apartments. Somehow, the twisted threads of fate brought all three men to Bell Street in the early hours of that morning. And one of them knew what happened to Susie Casey. Mariah and Shay moved in with their Uncle Rusty and Aunt Val after Susie's murder, and Kiana and Charlie, ages 6 and 8 when their mother died, went to live with their dad, Ted. Ted was actually the beneficiary of Susie's life insurance, which typically would have bumped him to the top of the suspect list. But after he cashed the life insurance money, Ted used most of it to pay for Susie's funeral expenses. With the $4,000 that was left over after Susie's funeral, Ted split the money four ways between all of Susie's children. This, in the eyes of investigators, made him less likely to be the perpetrator. In the fall of 2008, just a few months after Susie's murder, Marty got a new job and moved from Billings, Montana to Phoenix, Arizona. Investigators never found a pair of shoes that matched the footprints found outside of Susie's apartment. Nor did they ever find the shoes or the shirt that Marty was wearing in gas station surveillance footage on the morning of April 12th on his drive back to Billings. Susie's murder and the lack of answers or justice had a devastating ripple effect on the rest of her family. Her younger brother, Rusty, fell into a deep depression after Susie's body was discovered. He and Val later got a divorce, and according to Val, Rusty had started making alarming comments about his desire to exact revenge on the person who murdered his sister. On November 5th, 2011, 3 years after Susie's murder, Rusty died by suicide at 32 years old. He was laid to rest next to his sister. The family would never be the same after losing two of their own, but they stood together, fortified by their love for one another and by their determination to find justice for Susie. In February 2012, 4 years after Susie's murder, prosecutors in Glendive, Montana finally felt that they had enough concrete evidence to make an arrest in the case. A SWAT team in Phoenix, Arizona, converged on Marty Larson's home and he was arrested for the murder of Susan Marie Casey. For the first time in 4 years, Susie's family felt like they could take a breath, like they might finally find some peace. But in the summer of 2012, Susie's family found themselves having to once again pick up the pieces of their broken hearts. On May 19, 2012, Susie's oldest daughter, Mariah, was driving in Circle, Montana, where she lived with her family, when her car went off the road and into a ditch. Investigators believed that she likely fell asleep at the wheel, and she was killed in the accident. Mariah was set to graduate high school the next day. She did not get to see her high school graduation or justice for her mother. Mariah Storm Larson was laid to rest beside her mother and her uncle. Marty Larson's trial began in April 2013. After all of the evidence was presented and all testimony delivered, the jury deliberated for 3 hours before finding Marty Larson guilty of deliberate homicide in the murder of Susan Casey, 5 years after she died. Investigators believe that when Marty arrived at Susie's apartment on the morning of April 12, 2008, he did, in fact, see her in the truck with her new boyfriend. He waited and watched for 27 minutes, knowing exactly what was happening in that truck. When Susie finally got out and started walking toward her front door, and when Brad pulled away and was out of sight, Marty confronted Susie. He was likely enraged. He had been planning their wedding, a shotgun affair set for Las Vegas, while she was out cozying up to another man on the bank of the Yellowstone River. Marty attacked Susie, and though she fought desperately, leaving huge scratches on his neck and back, he strangled her to death before placing her in the back of his minivan and getting on the interstate back to Billings. On his way home, he stopped in a town 80 miles away from Glendive, drove to the edge of the river, and left Susie there to be found 3 weeks later. In August 2013, a judge sentenced Marty Larson to 110 years in prison, with no possibility of parole until at least 2042. Susie's son, Shay, graduated high school in 2013, and his younger sisters, Kiana and Charlie, were junior bridesmaids in Val's wedding when she remarried. Susie's family and friends have spoken on television shows such as Dateline, See No Evil, and True Crime with Aphrodite Jones about Susie's murder and the family tragedies that came in the following years. Susan Casey cast a bright light over everyone she knew. She was feisty, fun-loving, a devoted mother, and a force of a woman. She was determined to make a great life for herself and her children, and it is an absolute tragedy that she never got to see that through. If you'd like to request a case to be covered on the show, you'll find a link to a case request form in the show notes. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, where you'll find full episodes, complete with photos relevant to each case. You can follow the podcast on X, formerly Twitter, at Crime Again Pod, on Instagram at Crime Again Podcast, and on TikTok at Crime Again Podcast. Links to all social media can be found in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of Crime and Crime Again.